puppy day camp with a flyer that said all three One Stop Country pet supply stores are going to have an ice cream social on Friday, August 22nd. He's really excited to go.
Mason, you should definitely take the little guy because he'll be able to choose his own flavor of frozen yogurt like bacon and peanut butter or pumpkin.
Wahoo! Two of my favorite things, peanut butter and bacon. That's yummy in my tummy. Hey, Guinness, we should all go. What do you say? Huh? It'll be fun, right? Let's all go.
Cool beans. Bring your pets for a frosty treat to have either at the store or purchase a pint to take home. Don't worry, Mom. Since you're driving, they'll give you a scoop of people ice cream as well.
Whoa! I love this store. I do.
Treat your four-legged pets to a cool, tasty treat during the ice cream social Friday, August 22nd from 2 to 5 p.m. at all One Stop Country Pet Supply stores. Putney Road, Brattleboro, and the Twin City Plaza in Barrie, Vermont, and Emerald Street in the center of Keene. Open every day.
All right, back to continuing our discussion this morning. We've been talking with Gary Miller, who's the author of Museum of the Americas. Jared Miller. let's go to Elmore. John, how you doing this morning?
Great, Mark. And I wanted to thank you so much for having Gary on. It's absolutely riveting and fascinating and vital topic. And it seems to me the overriding principle is that every human being on the face of the earth has something inside them worth celebrating. And it's so glorious that he's bringing this out. It's kind of like what Studs Terkel used to do in his books. It's a fascinating world we live in. And just thank you for celebrating the everyday person, because everyone deserves it.
Yep. Well,
thanks so much.
Well put. Yeah, thank you for your call. You feel that way, obviously.
Well, I do. And that actually might, if you don't mind, might be a good segue into the work that I've done with Writers for Recovery.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, take them off. Yep.
I've been...
Headphones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Just so thank you very much. Clear here what we're talking about.
I've been working over the past 10 weeks up in Burlington in a project called Writers for Recovery at the Turning Point Center, which is the recovery center in Burlington. And that Writers for Recovery project is basically a writer's workshop for people who are recovering from addiction, or the family members of people who are recovering or who are addicts. It was started out as you know, kind of a spinoff from the Hungry Heart movie. Kingdom County Productions and Bess O'Brien went out and found some funding to do the workshop. And Burlington Labs in Burlington, which does a lot of actually the drug testing for people in that area. The owners of Burlington Labs are both recovering addicts, and they've been very generous to the recovery community. They've hired a lot of people in recovery to work for them, and they funded this 10-week workshop. We also got a great kick in from Runa Beverages in Vermont to get free drinks, and we have a little workshop every week. People come at 5:30 on Wednesday, and if you're around and interested, it's happening tonight at the Turning Point Center, which is on Bank Street in Burlington. And you know, people come in, and I try not to teach too much. I try to more view the people there as writing colleagues, and we're all in it together. But I do give little writing prompts, and people respond quick writing exercises, and we share our work together and talk about it. And I should also say that we are going to be having a public reading. I believe it's on September 27th, I heard that the date might change. Burlington City Recovery Day. We'll be doing a public reading from our work at the Contois Auditorium. And I encourage everyone to come to that, because I think it's going to be fascinating. The work that these people have been doing is just mind-blowingly incredible. And you can find out more on our website at writersforrecovery.org.
Mm-hmm. So it's a stupid, obvious question, but I'm curious to hear how you're going to answer it. So how does writing help somebody in recovery?
I think it helps in a few different ways. A lot of the things that people in the group are writing about are things that, because addiction is so stigmatized in our society, is hard for them to say publicly. So that's one thing, right? They get to...
Can you give me an example of that? What do you mean by that?
Okay, I'll give you an example. I gave... some of the prompts I give are more fun. You know, I might just say, oh, write about something, you know, fun that happened, or a song you like or something. But I said, I want you to write for 7 minutes on the topic, this is all I can remember from that night.
Wow.
Okay. Now.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
It.
That's good.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about these prompts, the idea for these prompts, they were actually developed by my partner, Deb Fleischman, in a writer's workshop we do for kids in Montpelier called Write Mondays. Anyway, the idea of these quick prompts is that, you know, they're so fast that you jump in and you don't have time to think, I can't write about this. You don't have time to think, I'm a bad writer. You don't have time to edit yourself. You just write. And so in response to that prompt, a guy named Stan Worthley wrote a devastatingly powerful response about his addiction, which was caused by an event that happened in a single night of his life that gave him PTSD. And the event was this. He was hanging out with a roommate of his, and forgive me if I get this story, you know, if I give anything wrong in the story, Stan. He was hanging out with a roommate, and a roommate invited him to go, you know, out for some drinks in the car and cruise around. And kind of at some point during the ride, Stan realized that what was really going on was that this man was on his way to kill his girlfriend. And Stan freaked out. He was paralyzed by what was happening. He stayed in the car. They pulled up near the girlfriend's house. The friend got out of the car. Stan heard a gunshot. And what happened was that the police were waiting for him, and they killed the guy.
Whoa.
And as a result, you know, that incident, you know, just traumatized him, and he started, you know, as a result, he basically, I mean, it's a long story short, ended up becoming addicted to drugs. Now he's now in recovery. When Stan came into our class on the first night, he couldn't really even talk about anything. He didn't share his work at all for a few weeks. He said, I'll pass. And yet he read that story out loud to a room full of people. This is a story that he had barely been able to tell anyone ever, you know, but he read it out loud. His voice was shaky, but he was sure. And he later agreed to have it published in the Burlington Free Press. Can you imagine the freedom that he felt to finally be able to tell that story? Okay, so that's a big thing there.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. Also, it's the idea that, you know, people get reinforcement for doing something, you know, great. I mean, these people are writing. Not everyone's a fantastic writer, but, you know, everyone's writing stuff that's incredibly honest and powerful. Okay, a big part of addiction is lying. You know, when you're an addict, you have to lie all the time. You lie to get money, you lie to cover up your addiction. And by the time people are in recovery, I think they're really sick of the lying part and they want to tell the truth. And they tell the truth in the most powerful way you can ever imagine. Every week in that group, the stuff that comes out of there is mind-blowing. Hmm. Mind-blowing. As powerful as any of the great literature I've ever read.
Wow.
And it's been I feel really honored to be a part of it, actually. And thanks, Bess, for, you know, putting me in that position that I can do that, because, man, it's an experience I wouldn't trade for anything.
Sounds like you didn't anticipate that's what it would be.
I totally didn't. I had no idea. I had no idea what to expect when I went into that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But right from the get-go, I was just astounded. And in addition to all their writing and all their honesty and everything, they happen to be among the nicest people I've ever met. So it's great. And for some of the people, you know, people in early recovery, it also, and another reason that Writers for Recovery matters, gives them something to do on a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
That doesn't involve drugs. It involves pizza, you know, and Runa tea and sitting around with a bunch of people talking about writing.
And you can lose yourself for a little bit.
Yeah. Yep.
I want to ask you, so share with me, share with us, and somebody who enjoys writing once in a while, so what do you think are really the keys to good writing?
Oh, boy. to good writing. work.
Let me even think about that for just a moment. First, let me do a just take a moment of your time, remind you about our good friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for an outstanding local internet service provider, make it our friends at gmavt.net. You can call them toll-free at 1-888-321-0815. You'll find them on the web, gmavt.net. We've been talking with Gary Miller, the author of Museum of the Americas. He's a Montpelier writer. Buy you a little time.
Okay, thanks for buying me the time, but I don't think I'm any smarter after that little break than I was before, but I'll do my best to try to say what was the question? What does it take?
Keys to good writing.
Keys to good writing. I think the keys to good writing, number one, is reading. Read a lot. You know, you want to be a good writer, look out there and see what other writers are up to. Okay, that's one thing. Work. Hard work. Nothing, you know, I think you'll probably find that there are some people who are, you know, naturally gifted writers. And everyone has a certain degree of natural talent. But the difference between that and a really, you know, and a published writer or very successful writers is persistence and hard work. But the other, I think probably the most important thing, and it took me a while to learn this, you know, everyone who writes, or a lot of people who write, you know, you want other people to like your work, and you want a publisher to fall in love with your work and publish it. And you can kind of get caught in this trap of, you know, what would they like me to write? How would they like it to be? You know, how would they, what do they want to hear about? What should I write about? Well, I can go out and say, oh, you know, a lot of books are getting published about this or that. Maybe I'll write something like that. And I think the lesson to learn is, you know, you got to really write about what you care about. It's taken me a long time to realize that the ultimate audience for my stories is me. I can write a story that I would love. That's all I can do. And I have to hope, and it's been the case, I think, with this book as it's come out, that I'll find my readers. You know, not everyone's going to love my book, but there are people who are really going to love my book. And, you know, it's not my goal to write a universally, you know, adorable book. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in finding, you know, my audience and my people. And I'm finding it. It's been really fun to have people say, wow, you know, I really love that story. I really love this story, you know. And
but that's interesting. You say that really the audience you're writing for is yourself. I would almost think that you would, you know, maybe even create somebody that maybe even an imaginary friend or a mouse or something.
You know, we're back to the mouse, yeah. No, I can only write. It's hard to describe. I guess I write a story that I think is really cool, that's really interesting, and that's the best I can do. You know, I try to put myself into it, and I don't know. You know, and it's hard because particularly if you're an unpublished writer, you're writing and writing and writing, and you know you don't get a lot of feedback. You know, you just don't. I mean, I play in a little bluegrass, you know, country music outfit, and I'm not a great player, but on any given night we can show up, you know, as we'll be showing up at the Thrush Tavern on Friday evening in Montpelier. Stop by and hear some Strictly Hillbilly tunes. But
buy a book,
you know,
while you're there too.
Yeah, and you know, but no matter what, we'll, you know, we can go out in public and we can pick a few tunes and somebody'll clap, somebody'll respond in some way. But you know, where do you put a short story where someone can respond to it? You know, and that's why it's been so gratifying. You know, when I got a very good review in 7 days, you know, and when I read that, it was just such a validation. You know, you're working so long thinking, is this really interesting? It's interesting to me, but is, you know,
yep.
Is it really good? Is it really interesting? I mean, it's all subjective. And so now that the book's finally out there, it's been just an incredible feeling of validation. And I just want to thank everyone who's taken the time to you know, to read the book, to talk to me about it, to pop me an email, to post a review on Amazon, you know, to just show up at my reading. And, it, you know, it's been really good for me.
Mm-hmm. Before we forget, your readings are going to be where, Gary?
Well, I'm hoping to schedule a long string of them in Vermont, but I do have a couple coming up. Tuesday, September 9th at 7, and that's at the Next Chapter Bookstore in Barrie. That's right on Main Street in downtown Barrie. And then Tuesday, September 16th at 6:30 p.m., right down the street from WDEV at Bridgeside Books in Waterbury. So please, if you're out there and you're interested in, you know, seeing what a Vermont fiction writer, some Vermont artisan fiction, come on by and show up, and I'd love to meet you and read a story to you.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have you read, actually, a section of one of your pieces from Museum of the Americas. We've been talking with Gary Miller. If you have any comments you'd like to make, we'd welcome those at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Back after this.
Very exciting news from Formula Ford. We've got a new sales director. He's Keith Higgs, and he's been... Oh, hold on.
Hello?
Oh,
all right.
Okay, apparently that's news, but not the news. The news is that Formula Ford has been authorized to get you into a brand new Taurus, Escape, Explorer, Edge, Fiesta, even the new C-Max. With 0% financing for 72 months, it's Formula's model year-end wipeout. And the savings to you are huge. So huge savings, huge selection. On new Ford with 0% financing for 6 years. Right now at Formula...
Hold on. I think I know what you're going to say. I got it.
And the fact that Keith Higgs is our new sales manager is also big news. Get that man an official management sweater vest. And for you, get to Formula Ford soon, because these deals end Monday.
Okay, that's a lie. They don't end Monday.
Right on the roundabout at the junction of 302 and Route 2 in Montpelier. Online at FormulaFordVT.com. No one will work harder to earn your business.
For nearly two decades, the team at PowerShift has been helping Vermont businesses make the most out of their online presence. PowerShift specializes in building responsive, mobile-friendly websites that look great on any device. Whether you need to update an existing site or begin a new business venture, look no further than the friendly, local team here at PowerShift. Give us a call to schedule your free website consultation at 802-253-6287 or visit us online at www.powershift.biz. PowerShift. Local web design. Global results.
Even though it's still the summer, we're talking about Onion River Kids and everything your family needs for back to school. Great water bottles from Clean Canteen with different kind of tops that you can switch out if your kid prefers a sport top, so they're going to use it for soccer practice after school, or if they just, you know, you want a really sturdy top so it's not going to leak anywhere. There are just awesome backpacks, really sturdy, identical quality to adult backpacks from the North Face, Patagonia, and that's what we provide at Onion River Kids. Finally, the world makes real, like, running shoe style sneakers for kids. We have three or four different styles from Saucony that are practically identical to the adult styles. Your kids can wear them for track practice, they can wear them to school, they can wear them, you know, to run around on the soccer field. They're awesome, and they're super comfortable, just like the adult styles. So come on into Onion River Kids. The store is right downtown on Langdon Street, across from the Shoehorn Boutique and Onion River Sports.
Saturday, get wild at Airborne Park Speedway in Plattsburgh. This week, Huntley Trucking presents the 358 Modified Night of the Wild. It's a wild Run What You Brung Modified open show, and wings are allowed. Plus, NASCAR Wheelin' All-America Series Sport Modifieds, Renegades, and Mini-Mods. Top it off with an Enduro. NASCAR Wheelin' All-America Series action this Saturday. Gates open at 3:30. Post time is 6. It's wild NASCAR racing at AirborneParkSpeedway.com.
Back to continue our discussion. We've been talking this morning with Gary Miller, the author of Museum of the Americas. You can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. Toll free 877-291-8255. You picked out something here you thought might be appropriate for us to hear.
Yeah, thanks. I'd love to read just a little bit from the story, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
This story's called Killing Houdini. For nearly 60 years since his last escape, Harry Houdini had been bound securely in the trunk of my past. I know magic and had made my living by it. I had worked as best I could to make him vanish forever. And until Ms. Helena Stith Davis intervened, I had maintained a carefully crafted illusion. The great Houdini, as far as most of the world knew, had been killed anonymously. Mine was the unwatched hand, performing the trick of death without detection. Miss Stith Davis first reached me on a Tuesday morning in early June. Spring comes late to Montreal, and pale, half-hearted sunlight drowsed into the front window as I puttered amongst the magician's capes and wands, the golden coins and disappearing eggs and silk handkerchiefs. The window's thick, dusty glass magnified the heat, and it oozed invitingly into my cold and ancient bones. The telephone's ring, when it came, might have been a sound I imagined rather than heard. It went on for some time, I would guess, before I responded. Merlin's Magic Supply, Quentin Strake speaking, I said, as I had uncountable times before. How may I help you? The voice of Ms. Helena Stith Davis, which I heard for the first time but not the last, conjured the image of the blunt, relentless woman that I had long ago grown to fear. "Tell me exactly what you know about the death of Harry Houdini," she said, in a tone that carried no detectable human emotion. "All of it. Leave nothing out." Once more, perhaps I hoped for the final time, the trunk had been opened. I had wanted to die without facing Houdini again, but might have known better. Completely disappearing after killing the most famous con man the world had ever known would be a feat of legerdemain beyond the abilities of the great Houdini himself. Con man, you might wonder? Houdini? And if you do, then you understand as much of him as most have, who believe that his artistry consisted of a magician's honestly won deception when it was instead composed of base fraud. I have studied the man, and I will reveal the truth, or at least part of it. While reports of Houdini's strength and ability to endure pain are accurate, his skills as an escapist are not. His true talent was his ability to conceal a skeleton key, to secret on his person a tiny blade with which ropes could be severed and cheap, easy freedom obtained. He could spot weakness in people as well as in padlocks, could parlay his charm and celebrity into collaboration, could prize from those who knew it the information he needed to figure out the intricacies of a purportedly escape-proof hasp lock or prison cell. In my opinion, there was little magic in that. As I have mentioned, I have my own secrets, and over the years I have kept them well. Helena Stith Davis was not the first inquisitor I had faced. Among the others were a Miss Eileen Darlansky from the Toronto Globe and Mail in 1957, brushed off with a curt refusal for an interview. William James Butler from the Albany Courier in 1968, sent packing by my loyal landlady, Eleanor Buffin, who defended her homestead with such zeal that he never returned. And Ludmille Stevenson of the McGill University Alumni Association, my particular favorite, if there can be said to be one, hoodwinked into believing that to reveal the truth would have launched repercussions as far-reaching as the United Nations. Yet this new inquiry, like the others, meant the risk of exposure. It was once again time to perform my magic.
Wow. That's good.
Thanks,
Mark. You're a good writer.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right. So what's the deal with the toothbrush collection?
Okay. I have another fascination, and it's with toothbrushes. And how did this happen, you might wonder. Years and years ago, maybe in the late 80s, early 90s, I started thinking about the toothbrush, and this is what I started thinking. There's no reason for one toothbrush to be in any way different from the other. They're all composed of the basic same materials, a handle and some bristles, and they do the same job, so why should they be any different? But I noticed at the time that toothbrushes were wildly different. I actually found one with a tilting head, like a tilting razor head, so it could tilt, and allegedly, it went against your teeth, at a better angle so your teeth would get cleaner. And I suddenly realized that there was this whole fierce, competition out there of industrial design, really, and everyone is trying to, buy my toothbrush because it's got a fat handle or a thin handle or a wide tip or a narrow tip or something. And so I started, looking really into this, and I at the time, eBay was just getting its start, and I went on eBay, and I did a search for vintage toothbrushes, and wow, there were all these really cool toothbrushes. And one of the first things I learned was that, we think of all these things like, different shapes of bristles and different shapes of handles and different this and different that are, modern innovations. And it turns out they're really not, They were trying to build a better mousetrap, back in the 20s and back in the 30s. So I just started, going on eBay and buying toothbrushes. And at one time, my habit got a little pricey, I have to say. I finally had to limit myself.
Wow. So how many do you have?
I have hundreds, actually. And I want to stress, people always ask, they go,
are they used?
Yes, the question they always ask. Toothbrushes, yuck. Yes, they're all unused. They go back to probably the Civil War.
Wow.
And the ones I have from that period, I actually have a really nice set that they're either, I think they're whalebone or ivory and their you know, natural pig bristles.
Wow.
And then up through, you know, probably the 90s when I really, you know, laid off on collecting. At one point I was buying every new toothbrush that came out, and it just became too expensive to do that. But, you know, I have some very, you know, some unusual travel tooth. I have a travel toothbrush that's shaped like a woman's lipstick case, you know, and you take the lid off and twist it and up pops the toothbrush, you know.
Oh,
I have
cool.
I have a toothbrush that's, you know, shaped like a beautiful woman's leg, and, you know, you take a lid the lid off the thigh and there's a tube of toothpaste inside. I have a toothbrush that's from probably from the 40s. This is probably one of my favorite ones. That it's like a hypodermic. You know, you put toothpaste inside the hollow handle, and you press a button, and the toothpaste pops up from inside the brush onto the bristles. I mean, they're just, it's an endless collection of really cool industrial design. And so, you know, I, of course, what do I do with these toothbrushes?
You put it in the Museum of the Americas.
No, actually, I put it in the Museum of Everyday Life in Glover. And Claire Dolan was, like, you know, I called up Claire Dolan when I found out about the Museum of Everyday Life. And I said, you know, you guys did an exhibit on the, you know, you have one now on the pencil, and you did one on the match and the safety pin. How'd you like to do one on the toothbrush? And she said, yes, absolutely. And so.
Sounds like an automatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the toothbrush story.
Wow. That's pretty wild.
And as far as I know, there, you know, I found a guy in Israel who was collecting them for a while, but I don't really know of any. A lot of dentists collect old dental implements, but mostly surgical tools and things like that. But I don't think there are a lot of toothbrush collectors out there.
No, I would bet that you might be kind of unique on that.
Yeah.
And there's probably somebody out there that's got used ones, so
yeah.
You're not going.
Yeah,
there.
We're not interested in that.
So what are you working on now? Are you working on anything else?
I'm working on some new stories, and I'm working on a new novel. This is the hard part, is that I don't like to talk about the work in progress because I feel like it dissipates the energy. I will say that the new novel is a country music novel. From what you can say, you know, from what I've already told you, you can probably guess that it's not set in the contemporary. But I just wrote a new story a few weeks ago, and I'm just keep pushing on, and I'll keep doing my thing for 7 days.
Well, the cool thing is that the music's playing here, so you can't tell us any more about it.
Okay.
It's a good time to ask that question. I really enjoyed you coming in this morning.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Gary Miller is the author of Museum of the Americas. I'll tell you where his readings will be coming up next hour as well, too. Keep your dial right here. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush and the flagship AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier.
I'm Rita Foley. A video showing